Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 13, 2015. Sudan holds presidential and parliamentary elections this week, and there's no doubt who the next president will be.
It is free and fair because all candidates are allowed to have their representatives in the polling station to stay with ballot boxes until the results are announced. So there is no way that this election is going to be not free.
And South Sudanese authorities protest against airstrikes, they say, being carried out by Sudan.
If they go on, surely they can threaten diplomatic engagement. But we are not hoping that that happens. That's why we are not retaliating the same way. That's why we are calling the ambassador, protesting through him to the Sudan government, we stop this.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Up to 13 million voters are expected to go to the polls in Sudan over the next 3 days in the country's first presidential election since South Sudan seceded in 2011. We have several reports for you today on Sudan's elections, beginning with VOA's Gabe Joslo in Khartoum, who reports the results of the presidential race is pretty much foregone conclusion.
President Bashir cast his vote Monday at the St. Francis School polling station in Khartoum in the midst of a swirl of news cameras pushing and elbowing for position. The 71-year-old leader moved from the registration table to the voting booth and paused for the cameras before dropping his ballot into a plastic bin. Apart from this public display, you could hardly tell it was election day in the capital. Monday, the first of 3 days of voting, was declared a national holiday. But at midday, there were few voters to be found at polling stations. At a quiet primary school in the Imtadad Nasser neighborhood of Khartoum, at least one loyal Bashir supporter, schoolteacher Amina Mohammed, was excited for the vote. Yes, there's enthusiasm about the elections, she said, and today is a holiday. Hopefully it will be free and fair, as people expect them to be. Mr. Bashir is running virtually uncontested, as the main opposition parties have boycotted the election, complaining about political oppression in the country. The inevitable outcome of the vote is contributing to some apathy across the capital. Just 200 meters from the Imtadad Nasser voting station, Ibrahim Mohammed sits and has tea with a few friends next to a small kiosk. Unemployed and disgruntled, Ibrahim has no interest in this election. Why would I vote? I'm not benefiting from this government, he said. We don't even know who the candidates are. We only know Bashir, and he's going to win either way. It's just a waste of money and time. Despite the low turnout, Mr. Bashir and his National Congress Party have been gaining popular support due to improved ties in the region, exemplified by a deal with Egypt and Ethiopia to share Nile River resources. The West continues to isolate Sudan for the country's poor human rights record. Another point of contention is the government's backtracking on a national dialogue with the opposition, armed groups, and civil society to resolve internal conflicts. The European Union dropped its support for the vote, saying without dialogue, the elections cannot produce a credible result. Speaking to journalists outside St. Francis Monday, presidential adviser Ibrahim Gondor emphasized that other regional monitors are on the ground.
Other friends and international organizations who are observers to elections elsewhere are here. We hope that the EU will revisit its decision. Otherwise, it's up to them. We are continuing our elections with the support of our people.
Observers from the African Union, the Arab League, and the East African bloc, IGAD, are among the monitors watching the vote. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Khartoum.
Meanwhile, the chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission in Sudan insists the presidential and parliamentary elections will be fair and free. Professor Mokhtar Al-Hasham says all candidates are allowed to have their representatives present at each polling stations and stay with the ballot box until results are counted and announced. Professor Al-Hasham tells VOA's James Batty that Sudan is under a constitutional mandate to hold elections because President Bashir's term ends this month.
45 political parties are participating in this election. They are competing into about 1,300 seats. And we have got about 3,500 candidates who are competing in those seats.
I've spoken with some main opposition parties, and they think that the process will not be free and fair.
It is free and fair because all candidates are allowed to have their representative in the polling station to stay with ballot boxes until the results are announced. So there is no way that this election is going to be not free. But of course, some political parties are boycotting. They are not participating, and that is their choice. This election has been announced since 2010. We have announced that in 2015, there is going to be election because the term of office of this government ends in April 2015. And we have to have an elected government. Otherwise, the government will not be a representative government. It won't be a legal government. It will not be a constitutional government. And this is the problem.
Do you think, therefore, some of the opposition parties that are not taking part, is it a mistake that they are not taking part?
Those political parties, all of them, understood since 2010 that there's going to be an election in 2015. And as I told you, I don't know any means by which a government can extend its terms of office.
The opposition claimed that President Bashir's ruling party controls everything.
Of course, this is not true. This is an independent commission. I'm the chairperson of that commission. We have been elected by the parliament since 2010. And when we are elected to this post, all political parties, the opposition, were part of the parliament who elected us. So this commission has been appointed, selected, and endorsed by a parliament in which the opposition, including SPLA, SPLM, were part of.
Professor, what do you think about the European Union? It says that it's not sending observers because it believes that the election will not be free and fair.
If they can tell me, how can I have a legal constitutional government without election, I have got open ears to understand. But the European Union has got no answer. If we don't run an election in 2015, in April, then the whole Sudan will be at chaos. We'll not have an acceptable government. We will not have a constitutional government.
That's Professor Mukhtar Al-Hassam, chairman of the Sudan Electoral Commission, speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today. Official figures say 44 parties are competing in the polls, but as we have reported, most of the main opposition parties are boycotting the vote. They say the government failed to follow through on promises of a national dialogue with the opposition and that the government has monopolized the media in the run-up to the polls. Mohamed Saleh, a professor of politics and development at the International Institute of Social Studies at Erasmus University in Netherlands, spoke to VOA's William Eagle about the opposition boycott.
The national dialogue was expected to create a new momentum in Sudanese politics, might even end up with a transition program that will not necessarily phase out the current political system, but create a more open playing field for all political parties to participate. And as a result of this promise by the government, the different opposition groups began to reorganize themselves in different political orientations and in order to come up with a viewpoint that they can use as a template or a roadmap of discussing with the government. The government took this as some sort of a hostile act that these opposition groups were preparing in order to oust the government rather than to dialogue with it. And one of them, of course, is the arrest of Sadiq al-Mahdi, the leader of the Umma party, and later on also the arrest of two other political parties leaders, the communists, and also others from the Umma as well. Now, the opposition considers this as an attempt by government only to use this national dialogue as an instrument for appeasing them rather than entering into a genuine discussion about the future of the Sudan. And this is one of the reasons, of course, why they have decided to boycott the election.
Are there any prominent figures among the politicians and parties taking part?
Very difficult to assess this, simply because the opposition, unfortunately, the opposition is very weak and very fragmented. You see, if they were to work in tandem with each other in order to oust the government, they wouldn't have had 15 presidential candidates. they would have agreed on one candidate and then to carry out the votes. Simply, the votes of all of those, even those who might consider, I think there is no prominent candidate among them. And also the votes of the opposition are going to be fragmented among 15, while the government, hardcore, will stand the test of their popularity. And therefore, many people, because in Sudan, as long even though they do not like the current government or also the Bashir as president, they do not necessarily vote for the National Congress Party, but if by abstaining, they will give the supporters of the National Political Party the opportunity to win with a very, very large margin. I think for me, the election, in fact, is a done deal.
Does President Bashir, after being in power since 1989, does he still have a strong power base, or has that fragmented as well? Who is his power base?
Now, his power base is the old Muslim Brotherhood, which reinvented itself in the National Islamic Front. And now, of course, it is the National Congress Party. With all these different names, still they have following as part of the mainstream Islamic movement in the Sudan. Of course, they are fractured. Turabi and his group and Ali al-Hajj, they left them some time ago and they created the Popular Party.
That's Mohamed Saleh, Professor of Politics and Development at the Institute of Social Studies at Erasmus University in the Netherlands. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. South Sudan government officials today summoned the Sudanese charge d'affaires to Juba, Ambassador Majdi Ahmed Mufadal, to express concern about recent bombing allegedly carried out by Khartoum in South Sudanese territory last week. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
Spokesperson Mawen McCall says Mufadal was summoned by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs over what the South Sudan government considers a violation of the cooperation agreement, a deal signed by President Salva Kiir and Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa in 2012. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says officials expressed their disappointment to Mufadal about Khartoum's bombings inside South Sudanese territory. McCall says Mufadal admitted Khartoum carried out the bombings, but says it did so because Sudan was allegedly trailing rebels fighting against its government within the territory of South Sudan.
We are telling the ambassador that this is not the way we are handling our issues to Sudan and South Sudan. We have the cooperation agreement that we are implementing. We have a low-profile diplomatic engagement that we are doing, should anything come up. But for Sudan to come inside South Sudan territory and bombard the areas, kill people, is completely a violation of the relations that we have.
Early last week, South Sudan government officials accused Khartoum of bombing areas in two different states, northern and western Bahr el Ghazal. McCall says the latest available security reports indicate that 11 people were killed during the bombings and several others wounded and property damaged. This is the latest in a series of bombardments believed to be conducted by Sudan on South Sudanese territory since the latter country gained independence in a 2011 referendum vote. Both countries have repeatedly accused each other of backing militias fighting in each other's territory. But McCall insists there are no rebels fighting Sudan inside South Sudanese land.
The rebels that are fighting Sudan are within the territory of Sudan. They are not here in South Sudan. And in the case they have crossed the border, the government of Sudan should alert us so that we know which part of the border that these rebels have crossed. And we can deal with that. We can handle the issue at a diplomatic manner rather than getting up and bomb the areas.
The cooperation agreement mediated by the African Union High-Level Implementation Panel outlines how the two countries shall diplomatically sort out any issue not addressed during the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement. That agreement ended over two decades of civil war between the northern and southern regions of Sudan. The pact includes issues ranging from oil, citizenship, and border disputes. McCall says the latest bombings by Khartoum may threaten the relatively cordial diplomatic ties the two countries have experienced since the cooperation agreement was signed.
If they go on, surely they can threaten diplomatic engagement and the diplomatic existence that are in between countries. But we are not hoping that that happens. That's why we are not retaliating the same way. That's why we are calling the ambassador, protesting through him to the Sudan government to stop this.
But it's not at all clear whether Mofadel's summoning will put an end to the Sudanese airstrikes inside South Sudanese territory. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN relocates Sudanese refugees. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can we promote science and technology in Africa?
Well, for me, to promote science and technology in Africa, first we should talk of technical schools. They should be given good tools, especially when it comes to practicals. They should be given good tools so that they can better understand what science and technology is all about.
There is only one way to promote science and technology, and that is the funding. We need more fund to construct more science schools of technology, and get more qualified lecturer to teach in those universities.
You know, in Africa, we need to think big. We should not wait for somebody to think for us. What we need to do, we have to put a vision and think big about it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The UN's refugee agency says it has moved more than 10,000 South Sudanese refugees from Yeda Camp to Ajuang Thok Camp in Unity State over the last 3 months. They say the vast majority of the people being moved are new arrivals fleeing violence in Sudan's southern Kordofan state. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
UNHCR's public information officer in South Sudan, Roko Nuri, says since late December, his agency has relocated more than 10,000 refugees from Yida to the new Ajuang Thok camp. Yida is a spontaneous camp that the refugees themselves set up as they fled air bombardments by the Sudan Army and fighting between insurgents and the Sudan Army in South Kordofan State in mid-2011. The camp is already sheltering nearly 70,000 Sudanese refugees. The problem is that Yida is less than 20 kilometers from the South Sudan-Sudan border, which Nuri says is too close for comfort for the thousands of refugees already traumatized by violence.
According to UNHCR standards, a refugee settlement or camp should be at least 50 kilometers away from the border. And this is not the case with the Yida settlement. And as I said before, it's a spontaneous settlement with no proper layout and no proper planning vis-a-vis services.
And Nuri says there is another issue with the camp,
which is the presence of military group in the camp, which makes the camp not suitable for humanitarian presence and the delivery of humanitarian assistance and protection services in the camp. This means UNHCR and other agencies, in order to deliver protection and assistance, need to ensure that a given refugee camp or settlements has a humanitarian civilian character.
The armed people Nuri is referring to are suspected SPLA North rebels fighting the Sudanese government in South Kordofan and Blue Nile states. South Sudan's government has repeatedly denied the presence of any Sudanese armed group within its territory. Nuri says UNHCR has seen a big influx of Sudanese refugees from the Nuba Mountains in the last couple of months. He says between 500 and 700 refugees per week have been arriving in South Sudan through Yida since late December, and that's putting a severe strain on essential services, including water and sanitation services.
In the last 3 months, we have received more than 10,000 people from South Kordofan. Now Unity State is hosting more than 94,000 refugees from Sudan. Most of them are being relocated to Ajuang Thok, which is now over capacity of 25,000 people. But we are addressing that issue by expanding the camp to accommodate another 20,000 people, setting up another camp called Pamir, 12 kilometers southeast of Ajuang Thok.
Nuri says the new camp is being created in anticipation of more arrivals. He says new refugees describe pretty dire conditions in Sudan.
They are citing aerial bombardment and the ground attack as the main reason for fleeing Sudan. But of course, lack of job opportunities and education are also reasons for them to leave Sudan, as they told UNISTAR staff on the ground. I was there last week, and I met a 32-year-old woman who said, I came here, I decided to come here when bombs fell near to my home. It was no more safe to live there, and I also want my children to get an education. And the only place they can get that chance is in South Sudan.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Bor. An SPLA soldier was arrested by civilians last Thursday in Bor. The soldier was planning to raid a village. Officials say two of his colleagues managed to escape. Armed youth captured the SPLA soldier and handed him over to local authorities. As Philip Thornaleu reports from Bor, some officials worry the incident will encourage other civilians to take up arms.
Reporters were called in to listen as John Abraham Juang, speaking in Arabic, tells police in the Bor County's commissioner's office that he is a soldier in the mechanized division of the South Sudan's Army, or the SPLA, a unit charged with protecting civilians in Bor.
My name is John. I am from Malwal, Chad. We were on a camouflage.
John was captured in Malwal village, 30 kilometers from the Bor-Juba road on Saturday by local youths who were responding to a report of a cattle raiding. The youth decided not to kill him after he identified himself as an SPLA soldier. Isaac Mamerouk, commissioner of Bor County, says the suspect and his alleged accomplice were going to attack the village.
The intention was to attack the village, to take children and cows, but due to the readiness of our youth, they managed to capture one of the criminals and two run away.
Mamir says the fact that Jung is an SPLA soldier sends the wrong kind of signal to the public. The army is expected to protect civilians, not to terrorize them. Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says the soldier, who holds the rank of a private, was handed over to his commander in Bor for further investigation. Aguirre says if it is confirmed that the soldier tried to raid a village, he will be punished according to the SPLA laws and without delay. Aguirre refused to elaborate on the type of punishment Jung faces for committing such an offense. Bor County Commissioner Mamir says no degree of punishment will satisfy the victims of cattle raids and child abductions, which have been on the rise in recent weeks.
We have to protect ourselves. We don't have a mandate with the leader to declare war with any neighbor, but we have a mandate to declare self-defense to our people.
Major General Tukula Ayom, Police Commissioner in Jonglei State, cautions there is no need for civilians to take the law into their own hands. But Ayom acknowledges that more police officers are needed in Bor County.
We will need more forces. And we will encourage youth, because it has become a disaster in the area. So we need everybody to involve in giving us information. Police alone cannot cover the whole area.
Ayom says police do not have enough vehicles to respond quickly to reports of cattle raids. He says some villages have no telephone network, and as a result, information about attacks often reach authorities several hours after the incident has occurred. That explanation is being disputed by locals who actually see some of the armed forces as accomplices to the growing insecurity in the state. Colonel Aguirre says people should not lose faith in the armed forces simply because of a few bad individuals. For now, John continues to be held at the military jail, and army are looking for his two alleged accomplices. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Bor.
From Bor, we move to northern Bahr el-Ghazal. Officials there say they are taking action after residents of the state complain about how difficult it has become to get food items like sorghum, flour, and sugar. Chamber of Commerce officials say that traders told them at a recent meeting that one of the reasons there is a scarcity of food is because the roads have become impassable. But as Abraham Agod reports from Awil, the authorities are vowing to find a solution.
It is hard to find many food items in the main market in Awil, and the prices of few things that are available for sale have tripled in the space of a few days. That prompted Northern Barakzale State Deputy Governor Salfa Sholayat to call an emergency meeting between traders, members of Chamber of Commerce, Awil Town Municipality, and organizations under state authority to try and find a solution. At a news conference today, Shol said the purpose of the meeting was to explore the reasons that foodstuffs have disappeared from the local marketplaces. Officials began to look into the problems a few days ago when traders complained that even they could not buy basic commodities to resell to consumers.
We at first found that the prices were really high in the market, and after some time later, every commodity went on extinction completely. So we thought of inquiring reasons of these problems from those responsible. So here we met to clarify and find out what happened. We found out from the traders that they have convincing reasons for this to happen. We asked the government, we say we are going to work together to redress this issue so that prices reduce.
The reason the market traders gave were a strong US dollar, which makes buying imported goods very expensive, and the closure of roads leading to and from Sudan. South Sudan imports almost all its food and consumer durables, and traders have to pay for their imports in US dollars. Shaw says some traders have allegedly been telling consumers state government ordered merchants to raise the prices of retail goods. He strongly denies this.
I do hereby confirm on behalf of the state government that no agreement met between the government and traders, neither did the government give orders concerning prices. I would like to assure you that the government never attempted to meet with the traders to agree on prices. This issue has
We apologize for that technical glitch. But that brings us to the end of our show for today. We now leave you with the song Anna Sudani by Sumeya Hassan.
حكموا العدل في الورى زمننا طرى هل يعود ذا الزمن ردد الدهر حسن سيرتهم ما بها حطة ولا ذرن نزحوا
We have been listening to Sumeya Hassan with the song Anna Sudani. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ya biladi